5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
It's the new Panic Room. It's the show other shows want to be, and the show that authors want to be on.
The all-new Panic Room radio show is brought to you by HellboundBooks.com.
Well, hello indeed. It is, what day is it? I think it's Thursday. It is Thursday in November sometime, episode 69 of the new Panic Room. And welcome one and all. It's probably a bit childish of me, but this is episode 69, which always raises a titter for me. And speaking of 69s, we're going to bring us straight on.
Oh, my God. Speaking
what?
Of 69.
I thought that was a smooth segue, didn't you?
It was. I'm not going to complain. That was a great song, too. That was a great song.
Do you know,
I'm trying to ease into something over here.
Yeah, that and Ticket to Ride are my two favourite Beatles songs. So there you go. There you go. Something that people know about me already. So.
Yeah, exactly. No,
there you go.
It was great. I was definitely dancing in my seat there. And
I like that. So. It's a good. You listen to the lyrics as well, and it's pretty telling. I enjoy it.
You know, I have to listen to the lyrics now, and I mentioned this before, that one Lily Allen song. I had no idea what they were saying, and I was just thinking, it's such a cheerful song. This is great.
It's a jolly tune, isn't it?
Yes.
It really is, yeah.
So now I try to be a little more careful and pay attention to the words of the song because, you know, you could fool me. It could be some horrible, you know, horrible lyrics, and I would know. I would have no idea. I'm just dancing in my
seat. Yeah. Well, it's hard. I pay particular attention to what my daughter listens to because she's sort of getting into all sorts of different music now. And, you know, we'll be with her in the car and she's got on her iPod and whatnot. And suddenly just say, motherfucker, what, excuse me? What? What?
Yeah.
This is not Kids Bop. And they're talking about bitches and they just, what are you listening to? It's nothing. But, you know, you can either shelter them or just let the world come at them, which
speaking
is
of
my
Kids Bop, you know, I used to have like 20 of those. I had like so many. I was so lame. That's kind of lame, isn't it? I loved them, though. I
no, it's funny actually. No, I mean we went through all that phase with India. You know, she loved all the Kids Bop, but I mean she now listens to the genuine version because they do sanitize. I mean, one of my favorites,
yeah.
They sanitized the Meghan Trainor song, All About the Bass. And they'd really struggled with that because I mean it's a song in two parts really. One about it's about, you know, enjoying the bass rhythm, etc. Another one it's about shagging fat girls. You know, so and they've you have to listen to the Kids Bop version of All About the Bass. It's sanitized to death, and it's funny because India knows the real version. They're singing it wrong, Dad. That is wrong.
It is
wrong. You know, so but she knows things. She knows things, my daughter.
Right, he's your kid after all. My son, you know, he used to listen to jazz, and I thought that was kind of odd. It was kind of cool too, because I was like, you know,
yeah,
really
that could be the jazz. Yeah, my father got my dad got me. He was a jazz musician, played in a jazz band many 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 years ago. So I always had a big, big love of jazz because he used to, you know, introduce us to all the all these guys that sort of died of liver failure back in 1922 sort of thing. Like Bunny Berrigan was a favourite of his, and there was all these great names, and then obviously Tommy Dorsey and some of the big, big names. And it's like, wow, a whole different world, you know, mostly lost now, you know, but yeah, some great, great music, great music.
Well, you know,
I'm sounding old now.
Yeah, but the jazz was kind of cool. You know, I really did. I was, like, kind of cool with that. But now he's gotten into this weird, you know, gangster rap kind of phase, and I am not impressed at all.
It's fun. I mean, to be fair, I mean, it's not big and it's not clever. It's just a bunch of blokes, you know, and they're just swearing.
Well, this is stuff from, like, the 80s and, like, maybe early 90s. So it's stuff I remember, but I'm like, where would you even hear this? I mean, I don't even know where he's, you know, where the influence is coming from, I suppose. But
It does. I mean, you know, they're just finding their way. And like I say, I'm not big on censorship with the kids, you know. They're going to be exposed to it. It's funny, about case in point, my ex-wife, she was a... just stick up her fucking ass most of the time, and you know, my son was how old was Michael? He was sort of 10, 11, and you know, she wouldn't let him watch South Park, and so what did he do? He used to go to his mates and watch South Park
and
there. You know, it's like, well,
yeah,
fine, you know. And whereas you know, okay, here my son, his son number 3, I think, I'm losing track. He's been watching South Park for a long, long time. India's watched it. I don't think she's a big fan, to be honest with you, but
you know,
she likes Archer. I mean, she's a big fan of Archer, which is totally inappropriate, I must admit, but it's funny. It's really funny.
You know what? I couldn't watch when I was a teen, I think, when The Simpsons went. I'm going to say that again. The Simpsons, when they were, you know, first on, I was not allowed to watch The Simpsons, but I used to babysit these children.
Why not?
You know, because I don't know. My mom thought it was inappropriate. So,
seriously?
Seriously. Wow. So I used to babysit these children, and I'd go over to their house, and we'd watch The Simpsons, you know, there, because they were allowed to. And I thought that was pretty sad that these, you know, 4 and 6-year-old kids are able to watch The Simpsons, but
and
I'm
you
not.
Couldn't.
Yeah. There was something wrong with that.
Again, this is very the way my divorce went. My ex-wife actually stopped the kids watching The Simpsons because that was something they used to watch with me.
That was the
mindset of my ex-wife. You know, it'll all come out in one of my novels one of these days. when I can face it, there's you know, I've sort of repressed most of that now. But yeah, again, I mean, it's funny with this. I mean, every now and then they'll slip in a sort of a grown-up joke, and you know, it'll fly over the kids' heads, and you know, you'll have a chuckle. And
the Disney movies, they have that. You know, occasionally they have that humor in there, and I just love that. I do.
Well, you know, that's the beauty of kids. I mean, Pixar are great at doing, obviously it's Disney Pixar now. You know, they're great. Like I say, they will just slip those guys out. It keeps the grown-ups entertained.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And some of those, I mean, like the Toy Story movies, some of the Zootopia, I mean, things like the Lego movie, you know, some of those kids' films, some of the best films.
Yeah,
of the most cleverly written films, because they have to be so smart with their writing just to get away with it.
Yeah.
Although we watch. Have you ever seen Bob's Burgers? It's on Fox. It's good. It's like a slightly more grown up Simpsons. And I remember trying to dodge explaining to India what beef curtains were.
Oh my gosh, no.
Because one of the characters said that, and I just had to sort of sidestep that a little bit.
Oh, that's so good.
And he was just a character mentioned that, and what about let's leave that one there, shall we? Is SpongeBob on?
It is, and you know what? My daughter was just telling me how excited she is because she has been watching SpongeBob for ages, and just recently, I guess, they're playing a bunch of, you know, shows that she's never seen before. So
they've had a run of new ones. Yes, they had a new Halloween episode, which was awesome. They've got a run of new ones, and the excitement of a new SpongeBob is just unprecedented. It really is.
I was never a fan. I don't know. You know, I loved cartoons when my kids were little, but I don't like, and I love the movies, but now I can't do anything animated. You know, I hear how funny South Park is, and there's another one. What's the other? Oh, there's a bunch, but I hear it's so funny how to watch them, and I can't do it. I don't get into the animation at all. I really can't. I don't know. It's weird.
I enjoy. I'm a Family Guy and American Dad. A lot of my favorite shows anyway. I will sit and watch. And it's funny actually. I was sat there watching SpongeBob. And, you know, she's buggered off upstairs to play. And I've been sat watching SpongeBob by myself for like 40 minutes now, which is fine. I'm happy with that. I'm comfortable with that. So anywho, we're mixing things up a little bit tonight. Sadly, Richard Chismar can't make it with us to be with us tonight. He has something popped up. So hope everything's okay there, Richard. And we will have him on again shortly. And we have. Lisa, how do you pronounce that? Is it Vasquez?
I said Vasquez.
Vasquez would be French. Well, we can ask her if she comes on later.
I don't think it's
French. Who is CEO of Stitch Smiles Publication? Because tonight, dear listener, tonight this is one for all the authors and aspiring authors out there. This is us with our publishers' heads on, you know, and what we wanted to do was to address anybody wants to ring in, please ring in, address any of the issues that, you know, people have with trying to get published. And who better to speak to than publishers, I guess. Kind of works, yeah? Does it?
I agree.
I don't know. To start off with, it's you and me. So Becky's not going to review anything. We're letting her have a night off from reviewing, but she's going to join us shortly and give her 2 pennyworth with as well. It's a good old Yorkshire expression, that. So, we get submissions on a daily basis from aspiring authors. I mean, what is it you look for in a good manuscript, Xtina?
A good story goes a long way. You know, we can clean up any kind of errors and stuff like that, but it's got to have a good story. And there's so I think there's so many times I'm finding that the story is so lacking, and that really turns me off right there, right away. It does. So you got to have a strong story. And I'm so picky. You got to catch me right away, too. You got to do something or say something or have something happen that catches my attention. Otherwise, I'm bored. I'm just so bored. So, I mean, when I used to read all the time, if I would go, for a whole page and I was bored, that's it. That's all I'm giving you.
I'm the same, you watch a movie, and the golden rule, they have to grab you. I mean, think of a Bond movie. Yep. They grab you before the opening credits. They have something that just gets your heart pounding and gets you drawn. And it's the same with the book, I'm with you. If those first, I will give it 10 pages. I was reading one just the other day, and it was very well written. It was good, but I got to like 20 pages in and nothing was happening. I gave it the 10. I thought, well, it's potential. 20 pages in, 20 odd pages in, and nothing was happening. Nothing. I mean, what again, it's something that. For a good storyteller, should be an easy fix. I would go back to this author and say, well, it's great, it looks good, but what you need to do is stick a prologue on it that's just going to boom, it's going to grab me. Yeah,
right.
Just that 5-6 pages that's going to give me a flavour of what it's about, what I can expect, and then you'd go into the building up the characters and building up doing all that. That's great. That was fine. That was good. But you need something, just that jump out. Because we're busy people, either that or we're just, easily bored. We don't have time to read the whole thing. And yet, there's been somewhere I've thought, I'm not going to name names because we're publishing them now. Where, within the first 10 pages, I'm having this, I want this, and then I've carried on reading. Just for the fun of it, because I'm really engaged in it, and there's been several like that, and they're the ones that are in our catalogue now.
One of the books that I just finished editing, I was so impressed with everything. I was totally impressed with his writing. I was impressed with how clean his work was. I mean, it was amazing. It really was, and the story was tight. Everything was just. I felt honored to be working.
Isn't it
on
an absolute delight when you get something that is so clean? Like that. I mean, there's always going to be the odd typo and the odd punctuation sneaks in, but it's wonderful when that happens. And it's just a joy to read it.
Exactly. I would be reading and reading and reading, and I would be thinking, I'm getting paid to read this, basically, because there's nothing I'm doing here, And I would find a mistake, and I would get excited. Yes, I can correct something, Because there were just few and far between, yeah.
Do you put a comma in somewhere just so you can get rid of it? Oh, yes. I've done something. Yay.
Exactly. I don't want to say it. I do know that this is a little funny thing, and I am going to mention it, but we're not going to mention names, of course, but I did notice this, one had a problem with differentiating between past, P-A-S-S-E-D, and P-A-S-T. And the funny thing was that by the time I was done working on it, I was confused, too.
Oh, no.
Just because every time that would come up, I'd be like, wait a minute. So by the time the book was over, I was like, I don't even know now. What's the difference? I got a handle on it now. Don't worry. I do.
Oh, good, good. That's good to hear. I mean, you know, I guess, you know, there are some very common ones. Past and past is a good one. To and to seems to be a difficult one for people. There and there, your and your. I mean, a lot of the classic ones that, the odd ones. Sometimes you spell, you also correct or do it when you're typing. And that's happened to me. And then I've come back that. But sometimes, when you see it again and again, you get, this author doesn't know the difference, you know, earlier before I came on air, you know, I got embroiled in a lively Facebook conversation with when I'm bored or, you know, my brain needs a break, I'll just get into some sort of something on Facebook. And this guy basically said, and I've heard this attitude before, you know, well, you know, it's got spelling errors and, you know, and typos and grammar and that, and that's what editors are for and da 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 da. And well, no, because if it's that bad, then you ain't going to get past. You're not going to get past the person like us, like you and me, and like Lisa, who will be on later. I'm sure she'll back us up, who read these things and see, you know, I mean, you see a shitload of work, but, you know, to actually get it into some sort of shape. It's sloppiness. You think, well, you know, and when I first got into this game, you know, and I did my homework, I researched, you know, what state do publishers expect your manuscript to be in? And the answer is the very, very most polished you can get it. And we accept that, writers are the worst editors, which is why editors exist on this planet. Bless them all. You know, but if you don't look like you made an effort, or it shows a level of level of ignorance of basic grammar, then, you know, we're not going to be predisposed to actually carry on reading it, let alone publish it. So it's a wrong attitude.
We become blind to our own work anyway, I think. I mean, I remember this was with Dark Musings. I had read over the poems in Dark Musings a million times. And when there were some corrections pointed out to me, and I was, one of them, there was a word missing. I'm like, how did I miss that? Reading this thing 100, how did I miss that? But
because in your mind, you know, the word's there, and you'll just, it'll miss. And you do, I mean, Stephen King sort of mentioned this as sort of novel blindness, you know, or editing blindness. You know, he said, even him, you know, he obviously has teams of people, I'd say, that do all this for him now. But yeah, you read it, and by about the 9th or 10th time, and we've done it. I've done it with my novels, you know, and I've been through this 10 times now, and it's spot. Somebody will pick it up, page one, oh, you know, that's rather type of, you know.
Yeah.
And you
spend
the rest of your life reading that, and never, like you say, you have spotted that missing word ever.
I saw a post on Facebook not too long ago by an author, and they were upset because they received a bad review on Amazon because their book was poorly edited. And they were downright irate because they thought that, you know,
I think I think that was me. I was pissed at the publisher because I'm not going to name the novel. It's been cleaned up now, but it went out and I got 2-3 reviews. I got good reviews, great story, great, but, you know, we're giving it 3 stars because it was badly edited, and that was totally out of my control. They did that, they edited it, and I was absolutely fucking furious. And that was I would never send anything out to that publisher again. Turning on its head, you know, as an author, you expect a certain amount of professionalism. I mean, with Hellbound Books, you know, we have editors. I can't edit. You know, let's have this. Send it off to somebody whose job it is, who is good at that, to clean it up, and they come back you know, superb. What they don't know, but it was just so terribly edited and laid out. It was, you know, and I was really upset. You know, and I can imagine, yeah, I can empathize with that author for being pissed. I mean, was he pissed off with the readers?
Yeah, no, they were, yes, exactly. Their whole argument was, you know, bad editing or the lack of editing should not take away from the story, and you should only, you know, rate it on the story. Basically, they didn't have an editor, and they just put out a book that
was littered with errors.
And,
again,
you know,
I was speaking with both hats on, as a writer, a reader and a publisher, you know, I mean, when you're reading, I mean, again, we'll give it a broad example. And some authors will do this as a technique, you know, if something pulls you out of the story, and it can be a spelling error, it can just be the wrong word, or it's like you're reading along and then suddenly the author says, hey, you're reading a book, and it pulls you out of the moment. It's like some of the movies when they try to be clever. You know, they just suddenly jumps out watching a movie, and some comedy movies it can, you know, when they break the fourth wall it can be funny. Others it doesn't work quite so well and it just pulls you straight out of it. It's the same with the book, you know. And if you're reading, if your brain's tripping over, oh, it's a missed word and that's spelled wrong and that's badly edited and that comma's wrong and that shouldn't, you're thinking about that. You don't get a chance to get into the story.
Yeah, my issue is who's talking right now? What is going on? I like to see it in my head when I'm reading. And there was a short story I was reading not too long ago, and I couldn't tell who was talking. And, you know, I think I'm fairly intelligent, you know, and I could not figure out.
Well,
shut up.
Yeah, well, let's run with that for the purpose of this argument.
Thanks.
No, you're right. It's funny. I've been reading one recently. Again, I'm not naming names. And it's the golden rule, and they taught us this at elementary school. You know, if somebody new is speaking, it's a new paragraph.
Right.
And
it's
that helps you to know. You know, there's like somebody speaking, and then, like you say, you have to go, but who said that? And it's somebody different, but it's in the same paragraph.
Well, see, here's the thing is that the paragraph ended, and then new paragraph, and we have the opening quotes, and we had closing quotes on the one before. So it's, you know, either or it was a mistake, and they closed the quotes when they shouldn't have, and it's still the same person talking. I wasn't sure, you know, because there was never ever so-and-so said or so-and-so, nothing. So we had these, you know, three paragraphs, and I was left going, who's talking? Is it the same person? I don't know. That was interesting.
But again, I mean, whilst you're doing that, you're not thinking about the story. So, you know, that the guy who said, you know, said that, then no, it's not just judged on, you know, on the stage, just as a whole. It's like a movie, you know, it's a really good movie, but, you know, the camera's fuzzy and the dialogue, you know, you can't hear it very well. And, you know, the scenery's wobbling a bit. And, you know, it's just not a good movie. It could be the best story on the planet, but if it's covered up with all this, if it's badly told, as it were, badly constructed, then, you know. So, I mean, as you know, again, with your publishing hat, I mean, is that your biggest pet peeve? What is your number one tip for the author out there listening is?
Spell check is your friend. That's a good one right there, I think. I know that, you know, we have something up on the Hellbound site, you know, kind of like guides, you know, a guide to go by and something, a checklist almost, if you will. And seriously, I don't think that people use spell check. And when I start to edit something, that's the first thing I do. Get that out of the way, create, you know, look for anything that's blatant, that just jumps out at you, and then go back. I don't understand why everybody doesn't use this. I don't get it.
I know.
You have the little red line, something's wrong.
And people just ignore it. Don't ignore the green lines as well. They're important too, because they will check the grammar for you. You know, and I mean, to be fair, I mean, for me, you know, because I write my first draft on my laptop, which was from England, and then I put it on my Mac to sort of polish it up. And of course, my Mac is American, my laptop's English, so suddenly it's underlining colour because I've put a U in it, and you know, you need a Z in there, and it's just like, sometimes I'll leave it just to piss the computer off. But yeah, you're right, yeah. There is no excuse. You have
exactly.
spell check, people.
Use
it. Yep. Use it. You know, it's, and obviously some things are going to slip through that the word is spelled right, but it's just the wrong spelling of that, like there or there. You know, it's
mm-hmm.
not,
yeah.
they're not going to pick that up because it's spelled right, but yeah. You know,
The funny part about that is I will judge somebody on, you know, the fact that, oh, my God, they don't know the difference. And I did that the other day in my head. Not like I called them out or anything, but in my head, I'm like, oh, my gosh, and you claim to be an author. And then in 2 seconds later, I was messaging somebody, and I messed up. And I was like, oh, my God, face palm, you know. But, I mean, I guess it happens. It does happen. So I'm
– Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. But I do know the
yeah.
difference.
Oh, no.
And I'm not so sure everybody does. But Google, also, Google is your friend. I don't
yeah.
know if people realize that as often either. And page breaks, that's good to use. I mean, you know, instead of, what is that button? Enter. Oh, my gosh, that just
oh,
drives me.
Oh, what? Don't, yeah. Well, you know, when you have a new format, you just get rid of them all. Like you say, page break is the easiest thing on the planet to do, and, you know, it's just... people, it's a tool of your trade. You need to learn how to use it. You know, don't put five spaces as your paragraph
yes.
indent. There is a button you can press. It will indent the paragraphs for you. You don't even have to use the tab key. You can use the tab key. That's fine. However, you can set it before you start writing your masterpiece. Set it, and it will automatically put your paragraph, and you don't have to think about it. One less
yeah,
button to press, it does it for you.
I guess another thing I think is really important is pay attention to the guidelines that are set by whatever publisher you're looking to submit to. You know, I mean, if they have, you know, spacings or, you know, how the fonts or whatever they want, pay attention to that.
Yes, yeah. I use the word loosely, a writer here in my hometown. Who we've had passed across a couple of times, and he very, very, you know, loudly was saying, well, you know, I do it in this format, I do it in my format, and if they don't like it, they can just fuck up. Today, he's only self-published, and he's not been picked up by any publisher, probably because of that attitude. Like you say, if we want 12-point Times New Roman, no spaces between paragraphs, that's what we want.
Do it like that, yes, exactly, yeah.
And pay attention. And again, part it's almost like a test, you know what I mean? It's like the first hurdle. You know, if you can't follow those simple instructions, then you're really in the wrong job, to be honest. You know,
well,
go
you know,
learn your trade and then come back, you know, then start your novel.
The funny thing is that whenever we do have, you know, a submissions call or something, I will have so many people message me and they have questions, and I, you know, there's a part of me that's like, all the answers are there. You know, all you have
yeah.
to do is read. That's all you have to do. And you're a writer. I know you know how to read. But, you know, the bad thing is I'm not
I do,
sure
I do wonder I'm, sometimes.
I'm not so sure I'm not the same way, though, sometimes. I mean, but maybe it's the day and age we're in as well. We want instant gratification. We want the answers right now. And so we're going to take the easy way out instead of going to find the answers for ourselves. But it's out there, so, you know.
Well, you know, maybe, you know, I guess, you know, my generation is sounding old. You know, I would never think of doing it if there's a question that genuinely wasn't answered. Or it's a bit ambiguous, I will ask. But no, I will go. I will dig out their website.
Dower.
I mean,
yeah.
I've submitted to, you know, been accepted by many publishers. And I will go. And it's the homework. I'll go and do my homework. What format do they want it in? How do they want it? Do they want PDF? Do they want doc? And so I know exactly what. So I send it exactly to
yep.
the letter that they want, because I know if I do that, they're going to read it. They're not going to throw it away because I've done it in some fancy font because I felt like it, because it looked pretty.
You know, here's something that I'm not sure everybody knows either. And the only reason I do know is now that, you know, I'm on this side of the publishing thing. I think before when I would go to submit something, I wouldn't even notice those things. I really wouldn't. I would just submit however I wanted. But it's only now that I know that, hey, this is what we're looking for. So maybe people just aren't aware of the fact that there are certain ways to go about it. And there are, you know, people, most of the time, they don't always want the same thing. So you do have to read up. You do have to, you know, pay attention. Pay attention, especially if you want to, you know. If you want to be accepted, you know what I mean?
Well, if you want to get through the first hurdle, then it needs to look exactly. And it's not publishers being pedantic. There is a specific reason why we don't want it in PDF because, you know, should we accept it? There's nothing we can do with a PDF. Well, to be fair, yes, you can, but then you've got to reformat it, and it's just a pain in the arse. And it's easier to put that one on one side and pick a story that's, you know, in the format we want, you know, and it's that simple. Yeah, yes, we can change a font literally at the press of a button, but that's not the point. The point is, can you, because as a publisher, we have, all publishers, we have a relationship with the authors. And if we see, right, you're going to be awkward, you're going to be a pain in the ass because you can't even format it right, then we're less likely to accept your work, to be honest. I mean, I'm just being honest here, you know?
It's very true,
You know, I you know, with the publishers I work with, publisher I'm published with, you know, I will bend over backwards to make sure they get exactly what they want. You know, I work with them and I... You know, I'm, you know, grateful that they have seen fit to publish my work. That's the issue I go into it with. You know, which, you know, seems to work. So,
so far.
You know, well, you know, the last thing you want to be is a pain in the ass. Because, I mean, you know, once you're, you know, Stephen King or Clive Barker, et cetera, then you can be a pain in the ass all you want. But.
Exactly. You know, that's funny you say that. When I was younger, I wrote something for school, and the teacher told me it was wrong. I didn't have that right sentence structure, and I told her, well, Stephen King does that, you know, whatever it was I was doing.
Yeah.
She's like, well, when you become Stephen King, you can do that. You know, it's often.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Okay, she put me in my place.
Well, yeah, exactly. Exactly. Now, again, I've had this conversation with authors recently. Well, you know, Stephen King, they say, well, you're not Stephen King. With all due respect, you're not Stephen King. So get over yourself. Listen to what we have to say. And I speak to other publishers, you know, and they have authors, you know, new authors who will argue with them. They'll go back, or, you know, with suggested edits, and they will argue. And, you know, there's two ways that argument's going to go. One, you're going to give in and the publisher's going to, you know, do what they know is best. Or two, you ain't going to get published.
Exactly, yeah. And I think that's probably more likely. You're just, yeah.
You know, using us as an example, you know, we have one that is a novel that has literally just come out. Great, 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 great story. It's a scene, a pivotal scene that had turned off this author's regular publisher. And I'm pleased it did because she found us. And I looked at it and made a suggestion or two, and she rewrote that scene. Not a major rewrite, didn't alter the story one bit. But I know what's like, I know what is going to get us blocked on Amazon. And obviously, we're not going to spend a lot of time and money putting something out that's going to get blocked. It's still there. It's more subtle, and it's a bloody good story actually. But so you know, publisher does know best. You know, he's just not making shit up. You know, if you want to just do it your own way, just self-publish. I mean, that'd be my advice, to be honest.
No, right, that's true. Yeah.
There you go. Anyhow, look, we've got Becky waiting in the wings. I'm sure she has plenty to say about this. Hi, Becky. How are you doing?
I'm fine. How are you?
I'm fine. I'm fine.
He's so awesome. He does. I was waiting.
You do that well.
I know. I was being really quiet because I knew he was going to do it, and it just cracks me up every time.
Even though we're not reviewing, I'm gonna do this.
Looks like it's time to review something. Oh no.
Although it's not. So Becky, I mean, obviously you've been listening. I mean, you know, you write and you submit, and you know, do you think what we're saying is overly harsh? Or I mean, what is your take?
No, I don't think it's harsh at all. I think, like Extina said, like when Hellbound puts out a call for an open call that we're accepting submissions, you know, I get people asking me all kinds of things, and I'm like, okay, really, y'all can go to the website and look at this stuff, and I can tell you why.
Yeah,
they're lazy.
Yeah,
they're lazy.
Yep. Yeah.
And that just kills me. I mean, if you're too lazy to go to the website and click, I've given you the link. All you have to do is click the link, and it takes you right there.
One click.
I mean.
We had one recently who literally, I mean, we have the website is very, very clearly laid out, very comprehensive.
Right.
And we had, at the time, 4 open calls. And he just sent a story in and said, see where
here.
It'll fit.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
And it was like, no, you see where it'll fit. You do that.
Yeah.
No, we're not doing that.
We're not your babysitter.
That we're busy. You know, we're actually busy. I don't know if they think about that. You know, we're just sitting.
Well, for me, Extina, it's not a matter of being busy. I mean, I always have time for our authors and genuine questions. I will always, you know, take time to reply to and answer them. You know, as intelligent as I can manage. But it's more about attitude, to be honest with you. That for me was entitled. You wouldn't pull that shit with Simon and Schuster. Send them a novel and say, well, just pick where you think it's going to go, because you know exactly what they'd say.
Okay,
we're not Simon and Schuster. However, as an author, if that's where your aspirations lie, you know, this. It's like being an indie musician. You know, this is where you cut your teeth. This is where you prepare for your march on the big four. You know,
yeah.
And that sort of lazy, entitled behaviour ain't going to get you. Unless it's just me, I'm just a hard bastard. I don't know, but you know.
I have a low tolerance for it. Yeah, and our site is very well laid out. People should have no problem, you know, going there and finding what they need and you know the information. So. I guess that is definitely advice to read, because you know it's true. When we send out any kind of submission calls, there will be just constant messages and questions.
Right.
I never mind answering a question, but there are times. But it's there. The answer is there. Sometimes it's even on the poster. So you don't even have to go to the site. You know, sometimes it's just on the poster.
Yeah.
When's the
deadline? It's there.
Yes.
It says it.
Yes.
It's there. It's on the nice, pretty picture that Becky's created. It's fucking there.
Yes.
You know.
Yes.
Goodness sake. Have I missed the deadline? Well, you know, is it the 1st of December? No. Well, what do you think then? take an educated one. But I don't know. I think certainly the authors that are coming back, you know, they get us now. some will ask, you know, the come at us with valid, good questions, and, you know, which is great. I don't mind spending my time replying to those. That's great. You know, if it's career-based questions or story-based or whatever, you know, not a problem. I'm happy to help people out, but don't be lazy, people.
Exactly.
So, Becky,
also,
I mean, you know, when... Sorry, go on.
Go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
Y'all were talking about the editing and stuff earlier, and I've been fortunate enough to be able to beta read for a lot of different authors, and they'll say, I'm sending you this manuscript, and it's really rough. And I'm like, okay, you know, I can overlook this stuff because I realize, you know, it hadn't been edited. But I've had a few that have sent me what they called a rough draft that was, you could have just published it.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it was so clean.
There definitely are some like that. There really are.
And that just blows me away. I'm like, what do you think is rough about this?
Yeah.
And then there's some that you're like, what were you trying to say here?
Oh, God.
You know?
Commas. This is interesting here. I've read, you know, submissions that they're comma happy. And, you know, then I spend a lot of time taking out commas that aren't needed. And then I have some that don't know what a comma is. And I have to say, the ones that don't know what commas is, that's harder. You know, I spend my time, every sentence you have to read a few times because you have to put your own comma somewhere and then read
it
again.
Yes, you have to figure out where it goes. Mm-hmm.
Yes. So definitely, wow.
And I'm really bad about commas. I have been told I'm a comma whore. I mean, I would be happy when writing if I could put a comma after every word, you know?
Oh, wow.
No, I'm not that bad. I mean, you know. Commas make me
funnily
happy.
Funnily enough, I'm working on a manuscript at the moment, and she knows who she is. And literally, comma, it's just like, I actually said to us, all the commas I take out, I'm going to put them in a book and just publish this book of just all your commas. And it's just literally, it's like she's written it and then just got a pocket full of commas, sprinkled them.
And just throw them in there?
Sprinkled them everywhere. There's commas everywhere. And it's like, no, you don't. Oh, like you say, it should have a sentence with five commas in it. That, why? No, you don't need them all, love. You know, you don't need that many. Unbelievable. Ironically, she, you know, where she does need a comma, invariably, there isn't one. Seriously, it's just like, you've got all these commas and you couldn't put one there? Seriously, was it? What?
You're not on my road, are you?
I'm what, sorry? No.
You're not up my road, are you?
No, I'm not. And do you know the funny thing is as well? She said it's actually been edited before. She actually paid somebody to edit it. I said I would go get my money back, to be honest, love,
yeah.
Because it's terrible. But it'll be good. I mean, the reason I'm working on it because it's written in sort of old style Gothic English. Having read Shakespeare and Chaucer and a lot of old English stuff, I get it. And I think that's maybe where her editor fell down, because she wasn't a British person and didn't get that. You maybe thought in ye old English times, commas were everywhere. Commas were in abundance, you know, like scurvy and the plague.
I will say it's much easier to take out commas than it is to add a bunch. So I'm okay with a comma whore. I really am the comma. So
excuse editing anything I write.
No, I did edit a short story of yours for Depraved Desires 2, I think it was. And no, I don't remember having horrible commas. So I think you're being too hard on yourself.
Jack had a hold of it first.
Okay. No, it's definitely not too bad. I had no complaints with the commas.
Good.
That's good. That's what, like, it is, again, it's, yeah. I mean, we all have our quirks, is right. I mean, I know, I you know, I've been told I tend to over-abuse semicolons, and I do try not, and it's funny, when I'm on about my third or fourth edit of my own work, you know, I will have a go through just to get rid of the semicolons. You know, so yeah, we all have our quirks, but at least you know, I'm aware of that. But you know, as I think as Xena said earlier, you know, that there are some authors that just don't know.
Yeah.
You know,
and
they tend to be the ones that you pull them up on it and they get pissy with you.
Right.
You know, I've had in the past, you know, just people who have asked, you know, me to read their stuff just to give them some feedback, and you give them honest feedback, and they get I've lost more friends because they get defensive and pissy with you as well. You know, it's not like I'm an accident. You wanted the truth. If you want me to pat you on the head and say it's wonderful, fine. Just let me know. I will do that.
Right.
But if you want the truth from me, then you're going to get it, both barrels, because that's how I've grown as a writer. I've had my work critiqued by sort of top executives at Fox TV, and they do not pull punches, literally. They don't. They're not being unpleasant for the sake of it. They're just, you want a constructive criticism? Here it is.
Why would you not want to know?
It's how you
grow. You know, even now, you know, I welcome negative feedback as much as I do positive feedback, because, in fact, more so, because the critique is how
you evolve,
you know.
Yeah, and you know, it's truthful too. I think that there's just way too much smoke being blown up people's patootie or whatever. I do.
Well, I think one of the problems with self-publishing is so easy now that somebody can write something, and I've read some bilge. Literally bilge out there. When I was researching Bizarro before I wrote Colton Forche, you know, I thought I'd research, do my homework, research the subject, and there's some awful, awful, awful stuff out there. In fact, there was one, and I actually bought the paperback book, and it's like extreme horror, and I thought, that looks good, I'll buy that. And it was terrible. It was badly edited, badly put together. There was repeated paragraphs and that. And it's not often I do this, and I actually wrote and complained. And the guy, well, you know, if you'd like to give him a list of the errors, then he can fix them. I'm like, no, I'm not his fucking unpaid editor.
Yeah.
No. But because self-publishing is so easy now, this is probably why I would say go through a publisher, even if a small independent publishing house, you know, because... You're skipping that first sort of safety net the bad habits. All your bad habits are still in there and all the rest of it, and suddenly you go straight to publication, and then you start getting the bad reviews because it's badly written and it's badly edited and badly put together. Your reviewers have spent, you know, the readers have spent money are not going to, they're not going to pull the punches either. You know, so
we are running out of time here for our first segment, so we have to take a break here.
Okie doke.
Yeah, geez, come on, you paying attention to time or what?
No, I wasn't. No. Okay, right. You know, my bladder is telling me it's break time, so
I need a 3-minute break.
3-minute break. Then we're back with. Lisa Vasquez, so we'll be right back. Shut up.
This old house wants new children. This old house wants new wife. This old house wants home comfort and we focus on life. This old house wants brand new laughter. This old house heard many shots. Now the trembles in the dark and everyone's the light in the world's louder. Ain't got time, fix the floor. Ain't got time on the hinges, no.
Well, I needed that wee, and Xtina's probably got another bottle of wine on the go. So, yeah. So, I've been itching to have that particular artist on the show. Shaking Stevens, a great British artist. That's an old Rosemary Clooney number, actually. I'm a massive fan of his. The old sort of rockabilly, country and western rock and roll style, and always I've seen him live a couple of times, and he's just fucking awesome. He really is. So if you ever get a chance, just Google it, just YouTube him, whatever. He was one of the biggest selling artists in England of the 1980s.
Oh, wow.
Believe it or not. And anybody who listens to the show knows my love of rock and roll. You know, you know why, but he's just Shaky, I Love You. There you go. He was
there
awesome. So, hey, we have Lisa Vasquez. Lisa, how are you this evening?
I'm great. How are you doing?
I know it's not Vasquez. How do you pronounce it?
It's Vasquez.
Vasquez. I was right.
I think I was right, yeah.
I was close. Well, I never did. I studied French, so that's my excuse. I'm sticking to it.
Yeah.
So, Lisa, how are you well this evening?
I'm doing pretty good.
I think she's got
good.
Wine,
well,
too. Do you have wine, Lisa?
I do. I have my wine just for you.
Oh. I'm the only sober one on the show so far. That's great. I'm enjoying it. I'm having a right time. Thank you.
Well,
so,
okay.
Yeah, Lisa.
I'm fine anyway, don't I?
You owe me at least several pints, I'd say. I'm going to have to take you up on that. So yeah, Lisa Vasquez, who is CEO of Six Mile Silvercations, which is based in Houston, just like literally around the corner. You know, we've had beer and nibbles together, so it's nice for you to come
I'm
on the
curious.
Show, Lisa. I really appreciate it.
I want to know what nibbles are. I'm thinking, you know,
nibbles.
What is that?
Nibbles.
Mean? Is that like
nibbles, like, nibbles. No, nibbles is a food group all by itself. Nibbles.
So it's like, you know, I'm thinking finger sandwiches, and then I'm thinking, you know, Chex Mix. I have no clue what nibbles, you know.
It's a wine. It covers a wine. Yeah, Chex Mix. Peanuts.
Okay, nibbles.
do you do vol-au-vents over here? Is that a British thing?
I don't. What is it?
Stony silence.
What?
Vol-au-vents. It's like a little bit of puff pastry hollowed out, and they usually put some of sort of mushroom and mayonnaise creamy stuff in the middle.
Oh no. No,
I guess it's a British thing.
Yeah.
I guess it's a British thing. But
that
nibbles.
Is one
thing
you can keep on that side of the pond.
Right? maybe he just didn't describe it too well. That could be, too.
Maybe.
You know.
That could be.
No, they really are that disgusting, to be honest with you.
Okay, well, then we'll pass.
So, yeah, Lisa, I dare say you've been listening in. You know, as a fellow publisher, what gets your goat let's not be unpleasant. You know, what hints and tips would you give to aspiring authors who want to get published?
I think you hit on a lot of the pet peeves before I came on. So thank you for that, because I probably would have ranted on with you, and this would have been a show twice as long as you intended. But, you know, I have to say that Six Mile Publications started off, we still are, but we start off really as a teaching company, where we would take those manuscripts that had a lot of the errors and we would teach the authors how to clean up that manuscript. But like you said, when those authors start getting entitled, it's not even that they get nasty, they just get entitled to your critique. And I'm thinking, wait a minute, like, when we took your story on, we let you know this is going to be a work in progress. We let you know that this is going to be hands-on training for you to go into the field as a professional. So we already knew when you came in that this is maybe your first novel, or maybe you just don't have the strong enough skills so that you can publish this with one of the bigger publishers or whatever. So this manuscript that you hand to us is not publishable as is. I don't know of any single author that can give me a manuscript that can publish as is. So, and if that happens, it's going to start putting people out of business, number one.
Yeah.
Number two, I think what they need to understand is that whether you're submitting to a small publisher or you're submitting to a big publisher, you have to put work in. And it's not just I give you my book and I run off and I go put my thumb in my ass. It's you have to really sit down and have to work. And that means
mm-hmm.
marketing. That means, working with your editor. And that means lots of critiques. As you said, your critique is where you're going to learn the most. It's not even about bashing or tearing your work apart. It's critiquing, and that's where logical thinking comes from. So
yeah.
my
mm-hmm.
advice for people who are just starting to write and they're just coming in and they're a new author, my advice to them is to get as much critique as you possibly can and take it for what it is. Period.
No, we get people, and you'll have seen these people as well, you know, that, well, my mum liked it, my wife, my dad,
yeah.
you know, my friends liked it, you know, I've had them, you said, so-and-so raved about, well, who is this, and you ask a couple of questions, it's like, you know, their best mate, or whatever, and
mm-hmm.
they're the people you give the book to when it's done. Then you can get all the praise you want, but it is so counterproductive. I mean, I have a bunch of people that I know, in fact, one guy I've actually had to start, I send him my work, but I've had to stop accepting his critique because I know now, you know, he's sort of, we've become such good friends that he would now not be totally truthful with me now.
Mm-hmm.
And which is great, anyway, it's nice, you know, have a good, but on a professional level, it's no good because what I want is somebody to say, look, Jim, this is a pile of shit. You wasted your time on
right.
this, you know, or it's
yeah.
a pile of shit. But if you did that, it would be a better pile of shit, you know.
Exactly.
That's what I want. You know, I would rather somebody say this is terrible than,
mm-hmm.
oh, it's wonderful, and then make an arse of myself with a publisher. Because
yeah,
they
exactly.
will tell you it's terrible, you know, and the higher up the ladder you go when you're talking to Random House, you know, they will tell you. In fact, they probably won't even tell you if it's terrible. You just never hear from them.
Right. And, you know, a lot of them don't understand that how much we actually give them. I mean, and I know you do this as well. Like when they bring in their manuscript, we are working with them and as publishers, you and I believe in the same thing, that we're not there to change their voice. We're there to polish it up for them. And
mm-hmm.
they don't understand when they go to bigger publishing houses, they're just going to change what they want. And they're going to tell
yeah.
you, I need this to go. And they are going to rip your story apart because they're marketing for a mass audience. So
yeah.
yours has to fit the niche and yours has to fit what they're trying to sell. So this is like you going to House of Dior, you've got to fit their style. If you go with a publishing
mm-hmm.
house that's more indie, you're getting somebody who's saying, we want you to be you. And that's the most glorious thing about indie publishing is that the author keeps their voice. It's no longer this foreign story to them anymore. So I just look at them like, do you realize the gift you're being given here? And by the way, you work for me.
Yeah.
You're so clear here. You know, I give you a contract. I'm paying you. So, you know, you work for me. And I hate to say it that way. It's really kind of nasty. But I, like you, work my ass off to really make them shine. And I'm not holding on to their book because I don't want to sell anything. I mean, I'm holding on to the book because I want it to sell. So if it's sitting on my
yeah.
shelf, it's
mm-hmm.
not doing me any good.
Yeah. yeah.
You know, so it's not to be nasty. It's just to say, like, hey, I'm the boss for a reason. I know the ins and outs of this, and I'm trying to teach you. I don't know everything, but I know a good amount that's going to get you to the next level. So if you would just listen to me, we could do this together, but if you're going to fight me, it's going to keep taking more time.
And I think, I mean, part of, yeah, I mean, hit the nail on the head, you know, then you need to listen, you know, as an author. And we, you know, Lisa's an author as well. I'm an author. Next day, we write as well. You know, you have to listen. And it comes to what we were saying in the first segment of the show is something simple as following the guidelines, the submission guideline, because that's the first part of listening. And if we have an author come to us who clearly hasn't read that or has chosen to ignore it, that's your first impression of that author. Now, you know, me personally, I'm going to be less inclined to want to work, because if they can't get that right when it comes to, as Lisa said, you know, critiquing, so, well, maybe we need to change this scene or take that out because, yes, we want to sell it, you know, we're going to have a fight. And I don't want to be fighting with people, you know, I'd rather, like you said, work with them. And again, I think a lot of authors don't realize, you know, we don't pay them a fat advance, but what we do pay for, we pay for the editing, we pay for artwork, we pay for time, we pay for ISBN numbers, we pay for websites. If this all comes from, it's not, you know, Mike Fairies that make all this happen. We do that, you know, just having a, you know, published website isn't free.
Someone's
going to pay for it somewhere along the line, you know. So, you know, I guess, again, you know, when we started off with our first book, you know, we didn't know any of this. This was all, you thought, oh, they've got our book and they're being pissy about this, pissy about that. But it's about making it marketable. You know, I guess we're in that position where we know, you know, if you keep that in, then Amazon are going to block it, or you keep that in, and people it's going to turn people off. They're not going to want to read that.
Publishing knows best. Out of the story. If it takes a person out of a story, I mean, it may be fantastic to you, but understand, you already know the story in your head. You know how that fits in. Yeah. They're getting it fresh from their own perspective. So they don't know how important that scene really is. So I have a mentor in Stitch Smile Publications, because like you said, I'm an author too, but I'm not entitled. So I'm like, please tear it apart, because as a CEO, I know my work's got to be almost more scrutinized than anybody else's. So I invite them, please just rip it apart, because my goal is to teach them, not only by telling them what to do or how things are going to be better, but by example. So, you know, one of the things I learned myself was, if I have to explain it to somebody, then there's going to be more than one person I'm going to have to explain to. And if I have to explain it, then I might as well write the fucking story so they understand it. It's just that simple. If I have to explain it to them, I'm not going to be sitting there while they're reading it and then go, okay, now remember at this part, remember when Jack... No! They're like, no, just let me read the book.
Well, that's the point. Unless,
the story.
Yeah. I say, unless you're going to go to the house of everybody who buys your book to explain it to them as they're reading it, it's not really practical. I mean, it's funny, I've come across it a couple of times recently, and it really niggled me, is the writing, then they say, for some reason this happened. You are writing the story. You're supposed to tell me what this reason is that this has happened, really? You know, it's your job, sort of. I mean, there's some reason. And it's just, how lazy do you want to be?
They don't even know. Yeah. So for some reason it happened.
It's your story. Yeah. For some reason this and that. Well, no. No, that's not how it works. Dear me.
Yeah.
But
definitely
again, you know,
too much the imagination.
It is. You might as well just give them a blank 300 pages and just write your own fucking story. You know, I can't be bothered.
Just
make your own up.
For some reason, this story happened. The end.
Yeah, the end. Yeah. Yeah, lots
for
of things happen in that.
The end.
Yeah. Yeah, that's it now. I'm just bored of that. You know, it's funny when I'm writing, you know, if I get to a point where I'm not sure what happens next, but I know what's going to happen after that, I will sometimes put, you know, there needs, you know, literally for some reason this happens that bridges that, and then I will leave it in my manuscript in red, and then when I come back to my next rewrite, it's there. I will pick it up, but I certainly wouldn't leave it and send that out. For some reason, something happened between here and here. I don't know what, but this is the next bit. So.
I couldn't be bothered. Okay.
I just couldn't be bothered to work that out. It was too hard.
It's a mix. It's partially lazy, but it's also it's a weakness. And I think authors need to understand that if you have to say for some reason, you have not done your job.
Right.
And you know, you've left an amazing plot hole where, you know, you had an opportunity to bring this reader into your world and to explain why, for some reason, that happened. So usually when my children say, for some reason, I know they did something. When they say, for some reason,
if you're not sure,
it just flew off the calendar, then I'm like, well, for some reason, you were in the kitchen when you weren't supposed to be. Plot! There we go.
Yes, there you go. There you go. Yeah. Well, my favorite, for example, was my stepson. For some reason, the water came out of the bath and flooded the entire house. And it was just like, so I said, you're telling me that the water just literally jumped out of the bath? Yeah. Jumped out of the bath and flooded, destroyed. Yeah. So he doesn't live here anymore.
Well, see, you're the writer, so he was expecting you to come up with the plot for him.
Yeah, I did come up with a plot for it, and I was spot on as well. So he doesn't live here anymore.
Oh my god!
Oh, it's all fun and games in the Longmow House, I can tell you.
I know. I
can laugh at the end of it.
I still, and I've said this before, but in my mind, your house is the Osbournes' house. It is. Yeah. I used to watch that show, and I loved it, but that's what I see, just chaos and Satan, like, you know, altars, and I don't even know.
Well, it's funny.
In a good way.
most nights before I go to bed, one of the last things I do is clean dog shit up off the dining room carpet. So you're probably not far off.
Like the Osbournes, yes.
We have. It's funny. We got, you know, these four dogs. I mean, it is bedlam, and with kids, it's just all going on all the time. But, you know, I wouldn't have it any other way. I like chaos. I do enjoy chaos. It's good because you can get away with so much when chaos is happening.
Yeah.
I learned that from a young age. If there's chaos in the house and say my parents were falling out, whatever, I could get away with pretty much anything because you're under the radar. The chaos is going on around you, and it's almost like a cloak. You know, and you just I still do that.
In my house, I thrive on chaos. Like in order to have a focus, I have to have chaos around me. So my kids never got away with anything because while everything was going on and, you know, maybe I'm writing at the same time, I pick up things and they're like, I don't know how the hell she just heard that or how did she see that? Because my mind just works that way. So, and unfortunately, I pass on my children. They have a name for it. I guess they call it ADHD, which, whatever. It's just thriving on chaos. It's just thriving on chaos. And, you know, and the funny thing is, if it's too quiet, I can't do it. Now, for example, if it's writing, I love silence. But anything else, if it's too quiet, I will claw the walls.
Yeah.
I don't know what's going on. But it's a way for me to kind of zone in. Well, I think going on, I like to say it's like being in the center of a tornado and just plucking debris out and seeing everything from the eye. But my poor children never really got away. They thought they did, and then later on I've come back and be like, hey, so what about this?
That?
And they're like, wow, I thought I got away with that. And I'm like, no.
Yeah, we
I
didn't
just
know you knew
on.
That. Yeah. Yeah.
I
you just sort of hold on to it till the best moment.
Of course.
I was an only child, so everything was always my fault, and everybody knew it was always my fault.
No, no.
Well, when you start blaming somebody else, then, you know, they put you in the padded room.
Yeah. We're not going to go there. I'm just kidding, just kidding.
But no, I need silence when I'm radio. We had this conversation on the show before that, you know, people, yeah, they have music they write to, but I need silence. But it was for a couple of weekends ago. My son was away with the band thing. My daughter was away for a weekend with a friend, and I was just passing like Saturday morning, pottering around, and literally and no word of lie, I put SpongeBob on because it was just too bloody quiet. The house was just too damn quiet. Like I say, I was starting to crawl up the walls. So I'm really in
the writing zone. I have music playing loud, 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 and I'll notice, you know, wow, four songs went by. Where did they go? You know, because I'm just so into it. I love that when it happens, by the way. But and to work, you know, editing, oh, it has to be deathly quiet. I have to shut my door. I have to make sure I can't hear anything because it is something that you know. And here's something that I was just, a friend of mine mentioned to me when I was editing an anthology. So there's a bunch of different stories in here. But and I would just start on the first one and just start editing right away. But now I'm like, you know, I should read through the story first so I kind of know what's going on and then go back and edit. And that seems to be working a lot better because when you're just editing, you're not paying attention to, you know, plot or anything like that. You're just, you know, reading to fix mistakes and everything. And
right.
If one that has a lot of mistakes, you're going to miss things that are happening in the story. So I have been, you know, it may take a little bit longer because I'm reading it twice, but I think that I'm doing it more justice this way.
I think if you read through it first, you also get a sense of the writer's style and voice.
Exactly.
So as you're fixing things, I think you become a better editor because you're anticipating or you're in sync with their rhythm.
Yes, definitely, definitely. I do know that it was a story from one of the other anthologies that I did, and I developed this thing where I just knew, you know, okay, this is the way the author does it. It's wrong. I have to fix it. But I knew, like, I didn't even have to really work at it. It was like I just knew. It was kind of cool that, you know, when that happened. I'm choking up
like,
the Smarties.
I enjoy listening to Xtina choking to death there. That was good, a good bit of radio there. That was great.
You remember those candies that were, they're called Smarties, and when you chew them up, they become like this fine powder, and I was choking
on
them.
Yeah.
Excellent. Well done. I'm not sure how we allow things to be legal, but Smarties is, you know, like everything under the sun, but Smarties is legal. So, okay.
They are good.
Yeah, in England, Smarties are pretty much M&M's. Sort of the candy coated chocolate. So when I was Smarties here for the first time, like, no, this is not Smarties.
So you're doing the demon thing, James.
Oh, okay. Sorry, I'll shut up.
I know it's early. He's
summoning the voices.
Right. So let's see. While we don't have James for a couple of minutes, I was wondering, do you want to do the 11 questions with me? I missed that, and it's always a favorite of mine. So now I have to find them because I didn't have them out today because, you know, we weren't going to. Oh,
and now, 11 questions.
Okay, number one, what's your guilty pleasure?
Okay, so since you made it abroad, I have guilty pleasures for a little bit of everything. I think I was just talking about this the other day. One of my guilty pleasures is Vampire Diaries.
Ooh, yeah. You know what? I never got into the show, but when I was younger, I read all of those books. I read everything that author, L.J. Smith, I think her name was, or something like that.
I think people who've read the books don't like the the series. And see, I tried to read the book after the series, and I couldn't get into them because I couldn't get over the fact that the main character's hair was blonde in the book. I was spoiled by watching Nina Dobrev or whatever her name is in Vampire Diaries.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't know. I should maybe give it another shot. I have heard it's really good, but I'm prejudiced now because I love the book so much. Okay, let's see. Baked beans, ranch style, or pork and beans?
Ooh, it depends on my mood, but I would have to say just go ahead and go regular ranch. Just regular pork and beans, normally.
See, because you're in Texas, you know about these ranch style things, and I have no idea what that is. For the longest time, I accused James of just making it up, but he actually sent me a picture one time, so I know they exist, but I've never
had
them.
They're really good. They're really good, but, you know, as far as, you know, having an everyday side, it doesn't go with everything unless you're a Texan, but which I'm not native, so yes, every once in a while, they're good, but, you know, not all the time.
Let's see. Puppies or kittens?
Puppies.
I agree. Kittens have claws, and they just claw you up, and puppies just love you. They lick you and love you, yes. What's your favorite lunch meat?
Roast beef.
That's a good answer, as long as you don't say turkey. I judge people who say turkey. It has no flavor. It really doesn't. Okay, anyway, what was your first car?
It was a 91 Grand Am. I can't remember the model, but it was a stick shift.
Really? I cannot drive a stick shift to save my life. I just can't do it. I've tried a few times, and I just basically almost got the passenger, you know, he was screaming at me by the time we got done. Just pull over. Don't touch anything. It's a lot of fun.
Actually,
yeah.
I learned to drive because stick shift because my ex-husband and his friend took me to a steep hill and told me to get into first from the parking brake. So we were there for about 30 minutes, and finally I got it. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, nope. If it's not automatic, I'm not there. I'm not the one. what do you fear most, snakes or spiders?
Neither. I love them both.
Really? Really?
Yes.
Okay, yes. I can handle snakes, but spiders just give me the willies really bad. Ugh. And someone just tagged me on Facebook today to tag, you know, your whoever hates spiders or whatever, and I don't know what it is. I just push the button, and there's a gigantic spider, and why do people do this to me? Freddy, Jason, or Pinhead?
Pinhead, all the way.
Really? You know,
All the way.
I just finished watching, what is it called? Hellraiser. There we go. I just finished watching it like a couple months ago. I think James was going to never talk to me again unless I watched it. I thought it was okay. You know, I don't know. I'm more of a Jason. Actually, no, I'm more of a Michael Myers fan, but he's not one of the options, so I'd have to pick James.
Yeah. I think Pinhead being so sinful, like he's so taboo and he's just, you know, he's very intelligent. And I'm more attracted to intelligence than anything else, so that's why I go with Pinhead all the way.
Yeah, I can't really say that for any of the others. So.
Yeah.
Okay, first draft, handwritten or word processor?
That depends, because most of the time it depends on where it happens, the idea. So most of the time it is handwritten, but every once in a while, if I'm sitting at my computer, it will be on the computer.
Interesting. I can't read my own writing at all anymore. favorite alcoholic drink?
That's a mood thing, too. I'm Puerto Rican, so usually we kind of default to tequila, but I love Moscato wine.
wine. I love wine. Okay.
she just likes wine. Just wine.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Doesn't matter what
wine. Yeah.
one interesting non-writing related fact about you.
Oh, my goodness. Okay, I have an interesting fact. I am part of the Real Vampire Court of Houston, and we've just put together the Unsaintly Court, so I am the Unsaintly Queen of Houston.
Awesome. I didn't know there was such a thing. That's great.
Well, the Vampire Court has been around for a while, and they just got a new king of the vampires, and he actually has been in the Houston press and all kinds of things. So, James, if you're interested, I'll go ahead and introduce you to him. We have.
I want to be a vampire.
Cool.
Yeah.
The Unsaintly Court is actually based off of my book. So on my author page, I have one of my great fans, James. He took over and he's been helping me out with it. And he's like, you know, he could call me the Unsaintly Queen. And I said, this would be really cool if we put it together. So he's like, absolutely. And he's local too. So we're going to put together this court, and we've been building it up. And it's really just a cool, fun thing that we've been doing.
Awesome.
So just to be clear, it's separate from the vampires. I'm not trying to impinge on theirs or anything. It is my own court, separate from theirs.
Cool. I like it.
We are just about out of time for our show, and I want to thank you so much for coming on, Lisa. And you have to promise to come back and see us again.
Absolutely, anytime.
Yay.
Yeah, thank you. It's been fun, hopefully.
It has been. I think it has been, yeah, definitely. And I want to say a shout out to Becky. Hi, Becky. You know.
Yeah, sorry, we ran out of time to have Becky on. She, I'm sorry, Becky, but time has just flown by. I mean, I hope we've been sort of informative tonight. You know, for authors and for all publishers.
I think in between the shenanigans, they should have some good information.
I'm hoping, you know, we like to think of ourselves, educational show, but hopefully we'll people take heed, and all us indie publishers will see an upturn in some of the quality that we get through.
Well, thank you guys so much for having me on, and I hope to come on again sometime.
Yeah, definitely. It's been an absolute pleasure, Lisa. Thank you so much.
All right, have a good night, guys.
Thank you.
You have a good night. Okay, and it's that time, Xtina, that we say good night, Xtina.
Good night, Xtina.
Good night.
Love you like I do. Don't know why I love you, don't know why I care. I just want your love to share. I wonder why I love you like I do. Is it because I think you love me too? I wonder why I love you like I do, like I do. Da 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 da